Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, everybody. This is the Blizzard Watch podcast. Welcome to it. I'm currently staring at the video feed of a dude with a Kirby symbol for a head. I didn't notice that about the brokers, that they have giant Kirby symbols for a head. I'm Matt. I'm the host. With me this week is my fantastic co-host, Joe Perez. Say hi, Joe.
Hello. And those in chat, no, we're not giving out $1 million because we don't have $1 million. If we had $1 million, things would be a lot easier.
Yeah. If I had $1 million, you'd never hear from me. Anyway. So it's been a tumultuous, it's been about a week now, right? Like it started last Monday night?
I'm pretty sure last Monday to today has been 40 years.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in terms of like actual chronological time, it's been like an 8-day period of time, so.
It has been, yes.
Yeah. Hopefully y'all have been enjoying Shadowlands. We're going to talk mostly about that. We're also going to talk a real thing because we're just going to move right into it. First up. The WoW Classic thing. WoW Classic is launching Phase 6. It opened its Phase 6 today, patch 1.6, which brings in, amongst other things, it will be bringing in the Scourge Invasion and Naxxramas. Both of those will be launching on the 3rd. So as we're recording this 2 days from now, if you're listening to the live stream 2 days from now. The interesting thing is that they decided, when they were putting the Scourge Invasion in, to change it from its original form. In its original form, when you had the Scourge Invasion happening, zones had to be defended. And when 50 zones were defended, across Azeroth on a server, then the next phase of the Scourge Invasion would kick off. And then another 50 zones would be defended. And then the third phase of it. I'm using phase a lot here. Sorry about that. But the point being is that's how it would advance. And it would advance for 3 weeks, hopefully. What ended up happening now with the changes, they changed this because back in the original days of World of Warcraft, back in vanilla when Naxxramas launched, there were not a lot of raid-geared people on any given server, even the biggest servers.
Raiding was hard. Like, and not to say that it's any easier now, but it was a different animal. It wasn't as accessible as it was now.
It's super easy now, and the reason it's super easy now is because we have 16 years of accumulated knowledge that we didn't have.
Yeah, because everything was brand new back then. We talk about that sometimes. There wasn't like video guides and like even like WoW.
ThoughtBot was the biggest site for World of Warcraft information, and all ThoughtBot told you was where to go looking for a quest giver, really, or what a piece of gear did, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Alakazam was kind of there, but Alakazam wasn't really all that useful for WoW. So it's just the every raid that's been launched since WoW Classic came up has gone down like my self-esteem. It's been, you know, out and it's like, okay, it's, you know, this raid's been out for half an hour and you know, Nefarian's dead. Someone speed ran him for, it took 20 minutes. Like, that's just the way of it. People know how to do these raids. They're not new raids, so there's lots of information on all the mechanics and how to do them. As a result, WoW Classic going into Phase 6 has a lot more AQ-40/Blackwing Lair geared raiders on it.
Yep.
And as a result, they were looking at the Scourge Invasion saying, this is going to be over in a week. Like, this is just going to get blown up. There's just no way. And so what they've done is they've doubled the amount of zones that have to be cleared to move the invasion to its next phase. So instead of 50 zones that have to be defended, it's 100. Instead of, and that's how it goes for each phase. It'd be like 100, 200, 300 that need to be defended to get to phase. Also, they're adding in an extra week for the dungeon bosses. There's, because there's optional dungeon bosses added in and so forth. Those, they're going to get an extra week. So basically the invasion is going to last from at least December 3rd to December 31st. It won't go past the 31st, no matter what. That will be the end point. But you're going to get solid almost 4 weeks of this. And I don't know how Joe feels about it, and I'll let him speak for himself, but I think this is a great idea. Because whilst I've been in the past very much they can't change anything, they have to launch it to do it exactly as it was. The fact is that when I remember when the Scourge Invasion happened back in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like 20, there were like three or four raid guilds on my server, which was Azjul Nerub at the time, that could even do Nax at all. And of those guilds, only like one of them progressed past the first four bosses. So yeah, I feel like the amount of heavily geared raiders on classic servers is just, it's an order of magnitude higher.
Yeah.
And that just, you just have to accept that and you have to plan for it. And I think doing this gives people a chance to experience the event, whereas otherwise it would already be in phase two the next day. So yeah, I think it's a good idea. What do you think, Joe?
I honestly, I'm in the same boat. So when WoW Classic was first introduced, I was very much in the camp of, they can't change anything. If they change anything, it's not WoW Classic. To my thoughts on it have kind of evolved. I don't view it as the same game anymore, and it's not its intention. And I've become a lot more okay with the idea of changing things. I talk about it a lot, like, you know, the idea of you can never go home again. That's what WoW Classic is, because WoW Classic to me, or what I call vanilla WoW, was the sum of the experiences at the time, which can never be recaptured again because of how far we've come. Like you pointed out, the knowledge of the player base is so much more expansive now. The availability of information is so much more easier. I mean, don't forget, things like Blizzard Watch didn't exist back then. And by the time they did exist, it was, you know, not video content. We didn't have podcasts. We didn't have things that helped explain to players how to do things. Like, we had written guides and even in small blogs. But even those were, you know, sometimes spotty at best, depending on what the content was at the time.
I started working on a WoW site in 2007. So just around the time that Burning Crusade was coming. Just before it, I think.
Yeah, and I started right... I started right at the tail end of vanilla myself. But
so, yeah, there just wasn't a lot of places to go. I remember when WoWhead was barely a thing. Let me put it that way.
Yep, WoWhead was a glimmer in the eye of somebody at some point. But I'm fine with this. I'm fine with the changes. I think that pivoting to sort of acknowledge that sort of level of tribal knowledge is what I'll call it. I think it's smart. I think it gives a better event, and I think it gives a better player experience for those that do want to go do it. And I think it's far closer to what it could have been, or what it's remembered as back during the original time versus now. Because like you said, like the number of raid geared people that will just blow through this content is insane at this point, especially when it's so much more efficient. And you're right, because I remember I was in Zul'jin back then. And there was maybe four raiding alliance guilds at the time that were like high up there. It was like Blood Red Moon, Unpossible. I can't remember the other two big ones, but like that was it, alliance side. And then Horde side, there was two. And those are the ones that were capable of even stepping into Naxxramas. And I can't remember how many of us actually managed to even get very far. I know for a fact at the time, despite my guild being like super uber raiders by comparison to the rest of the server, we didn't clear Nax at level. We couldn't. We couldn't get past, I think it was Saffron. Like, we could not clear her, like, no matter what we did. So now you have players that are clearing all this content so quickly and efficiently because they have the knowledge, because they, you know, have the ability to coordinate a lot better. Because that's the other thing, too. Like, we're talking on Discord right now as we're recording this. Discord wasn't a thing back then. You were lucky if somebody had TeamSpeak. Maybe Ventrilo.
Was it? Yeah, Vent was like, I remember TeamSpeak being before Vent. I don't know if that's the case for everybody, but I remember TeamSpeak before Vent, and then there was like the huge debate, which was better, TeamSpeak or Vent.
And then Mumble came along.
Yeah, I remember Mumble. Yeah, that was Mumble was like Catadays, wasn't it?
The Catadays, and it was the Vent Killer and all this other stuff. Like, and I remember having to have like different chat programs to talk with different guilds and different groups. Like I had to have Vent for PvP, and we used TeamSpeak for raiding and stuff like that. So it was a wild different time. But now everything is so easy to talk to each other comparatively. Like Discord, you can do it on your phone. I remember my phone at the time was a flip phone. It was the Motorola Razr, the original Razr. And I thought I was fancy. I was not fancy.
That's the thing about a lot of this. It's not, I've given people the impression in the past that I don't like WoW Classic, and that is not the case. I loved original.
So did,
I loved playing, you know, that was my game. That's the game that got me into World of Warcraft. I absolutely love seeing it back. But I've always been of the opinion that people who are telling themselves that this is a faithful recreation are kidding themselves, because it's not the game that we can't bring back. It's the players. It's the way they play.
Yeah.
It's the time. It's you are not, even if you and all of your guildmates from Classic decided to come back and play in WoW Classic, you are not going to have the same experience. You're all 16 years older. There's just no way around this. You've done things. Even if you've played World of Warcraft, you've learned from World of Warcraft. Even if you stopped playing the second Burning Crusade dropped and haven't touched it since, you've still lived the past 13 years of your life, and the world did too.
And think about think about how many video games, even not WoW, that were influenced by WoW and how it handled things, and how many of those games adopted a lot of those mechanics. So even if you stopped playing WoW and just played other games, you likely have been trained in a lot of the mechanics that you've encountered, would have encountered between then and now.
And even if you haven't, other people did, and they wrote it all down.
Or have a video up now.
Yeah, or have a video up. It's just, you can't go back. You can't go home again. You just can't. Life changes, time changes. And that's all I've ever really wanted people to realize, that this isn't a faithful recreation, because that's not possible. Because you can't actually get in a time machine and go back to 2006. But by doing this, it feels like Blizzard has finally admitted, yeah, this is the best we can do for that. And that's great, because now people will get to see it. It's like when they made the changes to Alterac Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I was opposed to those changes at first, but the more I think about it, the more I'm like, yeah.
It was
because
the right
now
call.
People can play Alterac Valley now. It's not just a Zerg fest to the end.
And I think that's the important thing. Like, it's becoming a game in its own right. Like, and I think that's sort of like the big thing, right? Like, it's not just this product that they originally, I felt like almost they were just throwing it up to keep people quiet, but now it feels like, no, they're actually starting to treat it like a regular game that they're developing and looking at it from a modern eye. And I think it's better for it. I think the players that are out there playing Classic, I see you guys. I hope you're having fun with this. I hope that these changes are doing what they are intending to do and giving you positive content, letting you experience some of those pieces of our history with modern eyes. And I'm, as long as they keep doing that, and as long as players are having fun, I'm happy. That's it.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. So we can move on to the next thing, which is just general. Shadowlands week. I heard Joe hit 60 over the weekend. I have not hit 60 yet. I've been like, basically, I get a character done with rested and I switch to the next character. I've got all my characters past them all now. So averaging between level 51 and 53, depending on how far I've gotten before I ran it. And I'm cycling back to my highest level character to try and get them to 60 this week, which I assume will happen, get like level 57 and they haven't been. So
yeah,
the rest of the alone I'll probably get done before I even get out of Ardenweald. But regardless, we've both been playing for a while, so I'm going to turn this over to Joe for a second and say, okay, Joe, the best thing you've experienced while playing Shadowlands this week.
The best thing I experienced in Shadowlands this week. Okay. So years ago, I used to write a column for the site that should no longer be named, that was it came from the pug. And some people may remember that, but it used to be one of those things where, like, before, like, Raid Finder was a thing, before group, like, pre-made Group Finder was a thing, I used to fling myself as a healer into random pugs on my server and, you know, do raiding and do things for content that my guild wasn't currently doing. And I would write about the experiences, players that were good, players that were bad, interactions that were interesting, stuff like that. And I remember some of the standout things being like players that were, you know, really, really nice and not necessarily hand-holdy, but were communicative and, you know, would explain fights and ask people, hey, have you done this before? If not, hey, let's talk about it and know what's coming up. I've seen a lot more of that recently over the last 8 days than I think I have in years. And I don't know if it's just old timers coming back or if it's people realizing that these dungeons aren't necessarily a joke anymore. Like they used to be, like you can't just speed through them and ignore mechanics. Like there's people that are actually sitting down and like, hey, this is what this boss is going to do. I know it says this in the dungeon journal. Here's a tip that helps you out. Like I've seen a lot more player communication. And right now, that's my favorite thing that's happened so far, is just seeing a lot more players just talking about how to get through things or, you know, being helpful to each other versus just an absolutely stiflingly quiet group that just goes and does everything and then disbands immediately after the final boss is dead. It's been really refreshing. And I know it's not going to last. I mean, this is sort of the honeymoon period, but I didn't get this in Legion and I didn't get this in Battle for Azeroth at the beginning when I was started doing dungeons and mythics and stuff like that. So I think that's one of the coolest things. What about you?
The fact that I haven't had to talk to anybody. Like, seriously, I haven't had to interact with a single other human being. It's been great. I despise talking to other people.
And this is why we balance out, folks.
I have spent this entire running the different characters. One of the reasons I love running them all over and over again, rather than pushing to level 60, was so I could let people out level me and they'd all be up there doing that stuff as soon as it came out. And I'd be back here totally by myself.
But totally and fair.
That's been, I was really afraid that Shadowlands would be too group heavy, that it would be too much. I'd have to do stuff with it. And I've been really pleased that even with stuff like elites and so forth, I haven't really had to group. Like there's been some tagging, like, you know, multiple people killing something at once, but I haven't had to actually group up to get it done. I did one dungeon and it was a lovely, completely silent, nobody communicating, nobody explaining anything. Just go in and kill all of the various bosses. It was great. Didn't have to talk to them, interact with them, because I have massive social anxiety.
Fair.
Like, I don't want to talk to strangers. If I don't know who you are, I don't want to talk to you. It's nothing personal against you. It's just I get nervous. Also, when I tank, and I think Joe can attest to this, I am a perfectionist.
Yeah, that might be an understatement.
I want the pulls to go smoothly. I want people to listen and just do what I'm telling them to do so we can get through it as fast as possible. Done perfectly, like perfect execution.
I used to joke that Matt was like the John Madden of tanking when it came to it, because it was develop a plan, execute, and like adhere to the plan and make it as perfect as possible. Not a bad thing. Matt's still one of the best tanks I've ever had the joy of healing in my entire life in this game.
Yeah, but I'm very much that kind of. The thing is that, like, we were talking earlier about WoW, about original WoW, and I learned how to tank in original WoW.
Yeah, and I learned how to heal in original WoW. Yeah,
where you're like, okay, I got to pull this, but you're going to have to let me pull them around the corner. So I'm going to shoot with my gun. Then I'm going to step around the corner. So they're all going to come running.
And now you have to wait for X number of seconds so I can get my sunders up. Yeah. And
see, I want you to CC on the pull. So they stay back there so that when they get here, I can switch stances to thunderclap. And it's just a lot of stuff is simpler now and you don't have to do a lot of this stuff, but it's ingrained in me.
Oh yeah.
That I have to do this stuff. I have to, and I'll say this, that's another thing I actually do like about Shadowlands, is some of the mechanics are, like, they require you to plan ahead.
Yeah.
Like, if you are tanking a dungeon or healing a dungeon, you have to, like, oh, okay, I'm going to need a cooldown for that. Like, I'm just straight up going to need it. I need, like, shield block for this pull or shield. Or the healer's going to have to dump something big on me because my health is going to, it's just going to happen. Be a lot of them on me. Even with CC, I want to say Necrotic Wake. I can't remember the name of the first dungeon.
Necrotic Wake is the first dungeon.
Necrotic Wake, when you go into it at like level 51 completely unprepared, like you don't know what you're doing, it will eat your face.
Yeah, that's an under, that's accurate. Yeah.
So yeah, that's been interesting to actually see groups responding once again to like the old school. Okay, this is how this poll is going to go. And you know, not just like, you know, some hunter decides to run ahead of you and pull everything because they can, they're pecking. So that's been interesting. I've enjoyed.
Yeah, honestly, like this is probably my favorite time of any expansion release is the first few weeks while people are, you know, new players are coming back and people are starting to figure out how to do things, because you don't out-level the content yet, you don't out-gear the content, so you have to do things like that to a certain degree where you have to have CC or you have to understand your abilities. I like that feeling because, again, I'm like you. I learned how to do everything back in ye olden days, and it's sort of so ingrained into my play style. Like I joke, I've had the same UI since the end of vanilla. I have changed very little because I rely on muscle memory and habit. So yeah, I'm right there with you.
But yeah, and so far, I mean, there's a lot to talk about, and yet not a lot to talk about in terms of Shadowlands. It's basically still the same as, you know, it's still new content. I think a lot of people are still experiencing it. Rating is next week?
Yeah. Next week, yeah. Tuesday.
I'm not like, even thinking about rating.
Yeah, so. And if you haven't logged into the game yet and you've been doing a lot of content like I have, the new PvP season starts next week as well with the first opening of the raid. But also, you don't get your vault stuff until that week either. So, like, people who are logging in today or haven't logged in yet, or if you're listening to this live and expecting your vault to be there, it's not there until next week. Just a heads up.
That's good to know. All right, well, we don't have a ton of emails this week because of circumstance of control. Mainly that, like I said, I've had them. We do have some questions, so we'll go through those. And if that's not enough, then Joe will start looking at chat to try and fill us up. So we have a...
That means, chat, you're going to be responsible for helping us out here.
If you have a question for the show for the future, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast at Blizzard Watch. Or go ahead and use our Discord, the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel for our patrons. And we've got the Q Questions channel for not patrons. We look at all of them for questions. This week was mostly Discord. Hopefully next week things will... Joe, if you don't mind reading.
Not at all. Our first question of the day comes from 6K. Question for the anything. Well, we are in anything, so here you go. Top 5 guesses for souls that could have broken the Arbiter.
Honestly, I'm not convinced it was a soul.
No.
I
think they tipped their hand, actually, as you do Revendreth.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be one big possibility. Quite frankly, guys, I don't know if you need a spoiler warning from us at this point. Yeah, we're going to be talking about spoiler stuff in the emails, Joe. So, yeah, I don't think there's any... I don't think it was a soul in the place. I think a soul, no matter how wicked... I mean, she's dealt with really horrible souls before. There have been a lot of really awful people who've died. The first Gul'dan died. That didn't seem to bother her too much. She apparently processed him just fine. There have been, you know, a lot of Ashara's followers. You know, Xevious died back in Legion. That didn't seem to affect her. Although he was a satyr, so who knows? And he was the Nightmare Lord, so the old gods could have grabbed him. Xevious is a fascinating contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of people who have been really, really awful, it hasn't really seemed to phase the arc. So I don't think it was Essel. I think the solution is probably most likely.
Yeah, and a lot of people are sitting there and they've been talking about, like, Argus, and that's been a lot of everybody's go-to. And if we take what we learn in Revendreth with a grain of salt and look at the video, the cinematic that plays, one, we know it's a bolt of red, like super bright red energy, which seems very, very close to all the anima that's flowing through Revendreth. It has that same red and black, like super like illuminated palette type thing going on. Second, we keep hearing about a weapon that Sire Denathrius has in the castle. That's one of the things that they keep talking about in Revendreth. And at first, when you're doing it, you assume that, oh, it's the light. You know, he's learning the weaponize the light. It's the light, it's the light, it's the light. But I don't think it's that anymore. I think he legitimately just has, like, a giant mad scientist cannon inside of his castle. Like, I would not be surprised if he goes full vampire Dr. Wily on us and literally turns his castle into, like, a gun, because it seems like when you look at it from Ouroboros and you look where everything is positioned in the room of the Arbiter, it looks like it came from roughly the direction of where Revendreth would have been, which is slightly elevated than the others. And it's that same type of energy, and they keep talking about a weapon. Entirely possible. So if you're, I see Rossi spinning the camera around. If you go into the Arbiter's room, which I don't know if you can go back there, but when you do the stuff, it looks like Revendreth is above slightly from that room, and that is weird. But everything in Ouroboros is weird. But that's my guess. It is possible that there is a giant massive soul that ran through there and maybe caused some trouble, but I think this was planned from the beginning, especially because they're giving Sire Denathrius the credit for the drought as well.
I gotta say, though, up front, we've been told repeatedly that that Titan souls don't go to the Shadowlands.
Yes.
So even if Argus, you know, Argus's death doesn't affect the Shadowlands because his soul wouldn't go there in the first place.
Yeah, and we know that like Arthas's example was another soul that people kept throwing up as, oh, his soul's, you know, corrupted enough that it could have broken it. He went straight to the Maw. He didn't touch the Arbiter. So there's that. But I don't know. It's interesting to think about, and I think it's going to be a really cool reveal when we get there. But I don't think we're going to get the reveal until we get into the castle and actually, like, wind our way down to Sire Denathrius.
Although I do straight up, I'm going to say that I straight up think that the fact that there's a weapon in Revendreth doesn't preclude it being weaponized light.
True.
Because
We can talk again. Spoilers stuff here, folks. Sorry.
There's an actual Naru being held by the
Force of
Revendreth
in the Sanguine Depths, being taken care of by an Inquisitor.
And it's there because it and several others came to Revendreth and blew the place up, much like the Void did to Bastion in the past.
For perverting the light.
For their actions against the light, they showed in as a task force and blew stuff up. The problem that the beings of Revendreth have is that the light destroys them. It's like acid. It just it eats away at them. So, yeah, I think that could be tied into why that, you know, what that thing was. I think that could definitely be the case, that that the light is involved in some fashion, some way, shape, or form, something involving what they were doing with that Naru.
And that fight makes it perfectly clear that they're trying to weaponize the light further, too, because, like, that's one of the things the Inquisitor is doing, is trying to take the light from the Naru and turn it against the players, which is absolutely fascinating as well.
And it reminds me of what we've seen going all the way back to the Burning Crusade with Muru.
Yeah.
And then taking the light from Muru. And eventually, like, him becoming a Void Abomination because of it. The way that the Blood Knights worked, and you'll note the Blood Knights, it's a very similar thing to what we're seeing in Revendreth. So, yeah, I don't know how this is all going to work out. I do think it's interesting that Kael'thas is involved in everything, because Kael'thas is the guy who originally came up with the concept of perverting the light.
Yeah.
So
I think there's something to that, too, which is why he's there. And how he got into the graces of Sire Denathrius, because if he's been looking for a wicked soul that had that particular type of knowledge, that was a gift given directly to him by us, the players. Like, straight up. We killed, you know, Prince Kael'thas, sent him there, and he got, you know, of course he's that prideful, and he was going to go to Revendreth. It was a gift, a present. Anything else?
I think that pretty much answers that one.
No. I think that does. Our next one comes from our good friend Vertigree. Question for either podcast from Vertigree, the Undead Mage from Dalaran. So, spoilers for Ouroboros arrival cinematic. Based on new information, who or what was that red falling thing that hit the Arbiter? I'm assuming it wasn't Argus, because he was blue and gold and we saw him. I think Blizzard made it a big red thing for a reason, and the color is significant. Perhaps Illidan made a big mistake and actually killed Sargeras. My other ideas for that was include Kill Jaden, Helia, and one big torpedo made out of all the demon and demon-adjacent things that were inside the machine of Antorus the instant Argus died. What's your take?
Well, I think we've pretty much answered that.
Yeah, we definitely have.
I will point out, Kill Jaden maybe could go to, you know, here, although I don't think he would, because he's basically a demon at that point. But Sargeras is flat out. He is not going to come to the Shadowlands, just like we already know Argus not going to the Shadowlands when he died, because Titans don't come here. The Eternal Ones, who are the heads of the various factions.
Realms.
Realms, factions, whatever. They seem like alternative versions. They're like alternatives to Titans.
Yeah.
But not Titans, depending on what we find out about. Wow, this is a lot. basically, there's some dialogue from the Winter Queen when she's dealing with the resurrection of a specific individual that has been it's been used for people to argue that she might be talking about Ilune, and she might be talking about Ianar.
Yep.
If she's talking about Ianar, then the Eternal Ones are essentially like mirror opposites of the things, and thus they don't go to each other's realms, which is one possibility. The other possibility is that they are something else entirely. But either way, it does not seem like, based on what we've been told, the Titans don't come here, so it's not a Titan soul or anything like that that hit the Arbiter.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think maybe spending a little time talking about that wouldn't be a terrible thing. We did talk about it on Lore Watch, but I know there's some people that don't listen to Lore Watch, which, you know, why don't you? It's us. You love us, right? Listen to Lore Watch. The idea that they are akin to Titans is actually pretty interesting, because if they are, and especially that statement from the Winter Queen talking about Ysera being, you know, her sister's pet, if it is Ianar that she's referring to, which I think is more likely than Ilune, especially after our conversations a couple days ago, then, and we talk about this, they don't remember themselves basically how they came to, or how they started, in their realms. They were just there. It's entirely possible that at the same time the Titans were made, because again, Amonthul, the first of his kind, who woke up and became basically Daddy Titan, doesn't know how he got there. He just was. And what if he was made and crafted and sent there for a specific reason? What if there are beings that created the Titans and created the Eternal Ones for specific purposes and then just went off to the next thing? Almost like, what was it, the Eternals from Marvel. Similar thing, right? Like, they ordered the universe and then kind of disappeared.
Oh, you mean talking about the Celestials?
Celestials, thank you. Yeah, sorry.
The Celestials didn't really disappear, but they show up from time to time. But yeah, I get your basic idea. They are cosmic forces that come to a place and experiment, then leave their creation. There's an interesting thing about all this, in that Titans themselves are they're very similar to the old gods in that they are beings of pure arcane power that are thrown into our universe, and then they grow planets around themselves to gestate inside. They're it's sort of the universe makes a pearl around the Titan to keep them contained so that they're not just everywhere blowing up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they grow into that and become a being. And all, as you've pointed out, nobody knows, Amonthul doesn't know of anybody before himself. He just came to be. And then he started looking for others like himself and helping them, get actually out of their worlds, or hatch, or however you want to look at it. And we don't know what a Titan's gestation process looks like.
Yeah,
we don't know if they hatch from an egg, or if the planet becomes their body. We keep thinking of them as humanoid beings because we've seen them as humanoid beings, but the fact is they might in his natural form, Amonthul might just be a big globe, just a world that floats around the cosmos, which is one of the reasons why he couldn't really help against the old gods very much, because it would be one planet bumping up into another planet over and over again.
Yeah.
Everything on both would be getting, God, tidal waves, explosions. So there's a lot to it. And we don't really know. We don't know the origins of the Eternal Ones either. We know nothing about the first ones other than a few mentions. So there's a lot yet to learn in this expansion. I am deathly curious as to how anybody even knew that whatever they did would work.
Yeah.
Was it a Hail Mary? Did they just oh, we got this thing, we might as well throw, somebody knew that this would do something, or they wouldn't have done it. So that right there, that's an interesting thing for the future. I'd love to hear more about what.
Yeah. And I'd love to, this is one of the things that I like about BlizzCon's in general, is the story panels and the panels whenever they actually sit down and talk about the crafting of the story. And I would love to sit down and talk with the story team personally on, one of our podcasts perhaps, or maybe over drinks, whatever. I'm flexible on that. But I'd love to hear how the story has changed and pivoted, because it has, and we know it has, and we've talked about it a lot, especially on Lore Watch, where the original story of the Warcraft universe was very black and white, very you know, light versus dark, and very based off of like standard, like, I hate to say Christianity, but like it really was. And a lot of, like, instead of the light, they, paladins and priests were of like a god, and that's what they worshipped. And it's changed over the years, and I think it's gotten better from those ideas. I think they've grown and it's become much more involved. I'd love to hear the thought process, especially crafting a story now. Because you think about it in terms of just technology and everything else, like the tools that are available to them now versus what was back then. Because like there wasn't a whole lot of voice acting back then in original WoW. If you go back, like there were some cutscenes here and there, but when it first released, it wasn't really a thing in MMOs. EverQuest didn't have a whole lot of that. It maybe have some lines from some NPCs here and there, but how cinematics grew and now the tools that they have available for that, how the game engine has changed and how they present the story there, because those capabilities open up more complex stories that they can tell. They can make things different and more robust. And I'd love to hear the process of, you know, using those tools, using the current technology, how they develop stories, bearing in mind like how we react to it on like social media and different media outlets, because that has to have some bearing on it, at least in some capacity. I would absolutely adore to get a breakdown of how that's shifted over the times, especially the concept of the Titans in general, too. Like, that's evolved so much since the early, early days. I'd love to hear the thought process behind it of how they got from where they started, which were basically like a pantheon of D&D style gods, because that's what they were, to where they are now, which is like semi-limitless cosmic powered entities. But like, yeah, it's one of those things I'd love. All right. Anything else to add to that one?
Week. There's not any more to the question, is there? I can't remember. Some of the questions are very long.
That's it. The next one's a very long one, so we can get into that one.
All right, yeah, let's go for that.
All right.
Break it up if it's too long.
I will try. Actually, there's two more here. So this one's from Doc, who's a Blood Elf hunter. Question for the podcast. Oh, Watchers of Icy Tidings. I was having a discussion with a friend of mine, and we aren't exactly sure which of the races within each of the Shadowlands five current realms are native, which are transformed into that race by their passage into the Shadowlands, etc. For example, the Fawn and Centaur in Ardenweald, are they native or are they dead souls of other races who became one of those species, like how if you go to Bastion, you eventually become a tall blue Greek Adon. Were the Fawn and Centaur in life on their home planet and just died and came to stay in Ardenweald as they lived? The little goblinoids he says Venthyr, but he means Revendreth, like Rendel. Are they like the owl buddies of Bastion, soul bros? Or are they also souls who were reshaped into little gray gobos? TLDR, how did each of the Shadowlands races come to be? Who is native, is reformed after they die, and who came and kept their form? Ardenweald,
we don't know the answer to these questions.
Well, it depends. If you believe Ardenweald, you learn, if you pick it as your covenant, they do kind of tell you something about that, actually. So, again, mild spoilers, but in Ardenweald, one of the first things you do when you go to meet the queen, because you go to meet the queen to swear your fealty and all that stuff, is you get to hear the story of how Ardenweald came to be. And the first thing they say is that the queen was here alone for an undetermined amount of time before the first mortal soul appeared. And then over time, those souls basically became the fairies and the Spriggans and the basically the devoted, the people that are reborn into the realm to serve the realm of Ardenweald. So it makes it sound like, if that's to be believed, like the Eternal Ones were basically placed inside of these realms before anything else started funneling in. And then souls just started showing up, and that's what started making the races become things.
Oh, I will say this. We know that that's what happens in Revendreth.
Yeah, because the Venthyr are made through Sire Denathrius.
Sire Denathrius is the first, and he shapes souls that he considers redeemed, the Venthyr. So those guys, and pretty much any of them, the big stone gargoyle dudes, the little gobbo dudes, they're all made by Sire Denathrius. I don't think there's been any particular explanation about why that some people in Maldraxxus look more or less the way they did in life, and others are just big monster dudes now.
Yeah.
Like, no one has bothered to say, well, the Primus turned most of us into big monster dudes, but some of us aren't. But there's, like, I think in Revendreth, you've got, like, the Venthyr, the Ashghouls, and the Stoneborn.
Yes.
Like, the Dredgers and so forth. And they're all basically created by Denathrius.
Yeah, and I think there's some sort of I don't want to say like replication effect, but like a ripple effect. So like with Revendreth is a great example, because when we see somebody being raised as a Venthyr, because that's one of the things, if you choose the Venthyr as your covenant, you get to see, that's part of the questing there, somebody become a Venthyr. And it's done not through Denathrius, it's done through somebody else, acting with the power of Denathrius, using one of the medallions that Denathrius empowered to go do it. So there's sort of like this recursive, I let other people go do this. And in Ardenweald, even, there's a certain amount of that, maybe, because we don't know, because we've only seen one seed get reborn, but there's an entire grove of rebirth, and it's unsure whether the queen's the only one that rebirths souls, or if it was something that was done, you know, just in that area. And again, Bastion is another thing too. So, and I think over as the populations grew, they needed other things to fill in, like the little owl people that everybody loves, the stewards. Like, they needed people to help with cooking and cleaning and doing the other things while, you know, the aspirants trained. So they created servants. It's the same thing with the dredgers. The Venthyr want to be served because they're, you know, stereotypical aristocratic vampires. They created servants. So the thing that I'd like to know is the wildlife of these zones and how those came to, more than, I guess, the people.
They basically are just walking bags of anima.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, because, like, is it an attempt to create an ecosystem? Are they just there for whatever reason? Then you have these weird rift-walking things that show up in Revendreth that love to suck anima. I mean blood, I mean anima. Like, there's a lot of weird stuff going on here that just makes me question why things were set up the way they were, because again, we know these realms were crafted, at least, or shaped to a certain degree. So I don't know. I think the humanoids were created by, at least had a hand in, by the Eternals or the Eternal One.
It does also seem to be that, like, at least some of the in some of the cases, the transformation of a steward into, or of any of the beings, into something more permanent to the Shadowlands seems to go hand in hand with the removal of their anima.
Yeah.
Like, and it feels like anima is the thing that is comes from our universe, our reality, and into this one. It enters into the Shadowlands from where we're from. They can't get it any other way, for lack of a better word. They don't have a means to produce it. It has to come from souls entering the Shadowlands. It's when they take the anima out of things. Like, for instance, the Venthyr, that you become a Venthyr after the long process of basically having your anima in the form of your sins and your pride and all that stripped from. And it's very fascinating to me that taking things away from people seems to generate anima. Like, is that what happens in Bastion with the removal of people's memories? Are you harvesting their anima? Is that why everybody turns into like a uniform blue, you know, kind of person? Because they've had their anima removed from them? That's not something I can say with certainty, but it does seem to be the case, at least in we know it's the case in Revendreth, that's what they are doing. They are harvesting. And as long as those people can keep their connection to the person they were in life, to the way they felt, to the pride and arrogance that they embody, they can keep generating anima. I believe they're called Old Faithfuls.
Yep.
Old Reliables.
Old Reliables.
Old Reliables. And that's an interesting thing to think about. And it would explain why the Kyrian are so devoted to this concept of removing memory, because it's part of their anima generating process. If you don't do it, if you don't take something away from them, they don't bond to the Shadowlands, and they can be reborn and go back to their like previous worlds. And we see that the only one that seems to be about doing that is Ardenweald.
Yep.
Like, that's the only one where people, they don't really necessarily lose anything. And in many cases, they go back because, you know, it's the ones who choose to stay who become the devoted. And if they're changing, then even then they're sacrificing a part of themselves. So, yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about that I hadn't really considered.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, the Shadowlands is, the longer I progress through the story, the creepier it gets as a whole, at least to me. Like, there's a lot of just weird stuff going on as far as, like, how the systems were set up, how people get processed through it, how souls get moved through it. So, and I'm hoping we find out more about that in particular, because I'm fascinated with how or why it was set up to do what it does. Because it's basically this, giant recharging station for at least these realms. But why were they even set up in the first place? Because if all they're doing is taking the anima And like, I know that there's some things about like Anima regenerates and some of the places like, you know, Revendreth and things like that. But like, but why? Why is that there? And that's the part that they haven't answered quite yet. And I don't think we're going to get for a while, but I hope we get an answer for it. Anything else you want to add to that one?
No, luckily I remember to push the button. No, I think we're good.
All right. Our last question from our emails here is from Ayabara, a Blood Elf hunter from Rivendare. I hope I got that right. Ayabara. Yep. P.S. The brokers, are they connected to the ethereals? Did they come to the Shadowlands without dying like us? Also, their head flame graphics are awesome. P.P.S. Fix hunter, survival hunters, please. Thanks for all you folks do. I have been watching since the days of the two-headed ogre and beyond, and still don't miss an episode. Well, thank you.
The brokers are those guys with the weird Kirby-shaped sigil heads covered in flame. I mean, I don't know if they're related to the ethereals. They don't remind me that much of the ethereal.
No, they don't really. They're a lot
other than they like to sell things to people. They definitely feel like they're up to something. I have no idea if they're living beings that are somehow invading or if they're native to the Shadowlands or what their deal is. I don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's the weird thing. Like, I always used to think ethereals were just, like, extra creepy. Like, but these, the brokers, are really weird because it's not just, the buying and selling thing. It's the let's make a deal thing. And the casual espionage thing, because they're everywhere. And one of the first interactions you have with them is, hi, we're a cartel and we broker information and you want to be in our favor. Go get this information for us. And like some of the first things you do for them is go get, quote unquote, you know, interesting items from these particular people inside of dungeons. But essentially, it feels like you're going to the last boss of these dungeons and stealing something from them to give back to them. But it's like, oh, I want this person's flacrity. Here you go. Why do you want that? Oh, don't worry about it. Here's a bunch of anima. Bye. Like, they're creepy, man. And then, like, what's her name? Venari in the Maw. Like, there's going to be some weird, interesting things happening there. That's for dang sure. And the fact that we fight one in the other side, which that's interesting to begin with, because it's basically a pocket dimension within a pocket dimension where one's decided to hold up shop, but it looks a whole lot like Ardenweld where they are. Like, their little pocket of reality is essentially like this little outcropping of Ardenweld with a bunch of the wildlife from there as well. What deal did they try to make? What were they doing? What information were they trying to gather? Because that's one of the things they yell at you about is, you know, my research isn't done. What research? So I don't know. Like, there's some weird stuff going on with them. anything else to add about our broker friends there?
I mean, one of the things I find interesting about them is, I mean, there's that concept. This is the problem. I was thinking about them, looking them over. It's not just that they're creepy. It's not just that they're like doing all sorts of weird stuff and not really explaining what they're doing. It's the fact that, you know, we know that they're in cartels, but we have no idea what the cartels are up to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know there's Artificer Zymox inside Castle Nathria, who's just, what is he doing? He's like, you know, he's worked with Denathrius, but he's not really a part of Denathrius's group. It's just really messed up. I have a lot of questions about the brokers, and I don't have a ton of answers. We know they're supposedly from some unnamed realm of the Shadowlands. I might look that up, but we don't. That's the thing that gets me. We know there are more realms in the Shadowlands than we've seen. Just the four covenants are just a small part of the whole Shadowlands picture. There are plenty of other places where we're not going to them because we don't have the anima to go to them. Like, the ones we're going to, you'll note as you go to each realm that the complaints about, oh, we're having dwindling anima reserves and you're using it to go to this new place. You know, we're going to run out. Ouroboros is teetering. So that, to me, Ouroboros reminds me a lot of Babylon 5.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does.
And one of the things is like it's like the city on the edge of forever, this way station between Shadowlands. At its height, clearly, I think Joe, you're the one that mentioned this to me before, but when you go into the chamber of the Arbiter, there are literally countless doors.
Yeah.
There's like so many of those things. And now we're barely using four of them.
Yeah,
and that, to me, like, the brokers coming, somehow the brokers have a way to Ouroboros, and they have a way to get Anima that's independent of the cycle.
Not just Ouroboros, because they're in all of the zone.
Yeah, but particularly the reason I'm bringing up Ouroboros is because they got to Ouroboros on their own. It's mentioned by the voice of the Arbiter. It's mentioned that they're broken. The brokers are now all over Ouroboros. They got there on their own, which means they didn't use the typical system that everybody else has been using to get around the Shadowlands. Mm-hmm. And they've got Anima to trade.
Yeah, they actually have a ton of Anima.
Where are they getting it? If it's mm-hmm. if all the anima drought's caused by all the souls going shooting into the maw, but the brokers, not only can the brokers get into the maw, and you know one of them is there, Venari is there right now,
and can move around relatively freely down there too. Don't forget,
yeah, there's a ton to these guys that we have not seen or heard much about yet. Like what is Cartel Vey? Because Venari the names of the brokers, it starts with, like, whatever it starts with before the apostrophe, that's their cartel. So, like, with Opulence Behar, Behar is of Cartel Bay, you know, and Talan is of Cartel Ta. So anytime you meet one, Venari is from Cartel Ve. That's her cartel. You know, so what are they doing? What's going on? Where are they getting this anima from? Where do they just have the fact that one's in the other side makes me wonder if the brokers are the ones who know how to steal souls, even from like the current situation. They can grab them before they go into the maw and harvest their anima. That's just one possibility. But they definitely have some connection that they're not revealing.
Yeah, and again, like, I find it fascinating because, like, when we go to the particular zones, they're there already in all of those zones. There's at least one representative of the main trading cartel there, because there's a, in Battle for Azeroth, there was that Murloc trading game that you could play I don't know if it was on the Alliance side too. I assume it was, but I don't know if it was also Murloc. But when you went to essentially the underwater realm, and why can't I think of its name now? Nazjatar. But like when you were there, you could do this thing where it's like, oh, give me five shiny rocks for, you know, this piece of weird corn on the cob that it's been discarded, and you trade it up and possibly got a mount. You do that again here in, you know, Shadowlands, but you have to go to all the zones. Like, there's one, you have to go to Revendreth and pick up something and go to Bastion and go on and so on and so forth. And they're from a broker in each. And your end reward is like a token that gives you a sign of favor from that cartel. What does that mean? How did they get to those realms beforehand? What were they doing? Because the doors were shut. They weren't letting anybody, through because they didn't have the anima to open the doors. So why? Like, you're right. There is a lot going on. So
I mean, there's the broker standing. If you're going around Ouroboros and you look at where the brokers are standing around, there's almost always a portal of some kind of independent make in those rooms. The brokers have their own portals. So they're not reliant at all on the system that Ouroboros uses. And that, to me, is really fascinating.
Yeah, and I'm sure we're going to find out more. I would not be surprised if they take a more prominent role as the expansion rolls on, even if it's just the war between the cartels and what that is, because at several points, and there's a point in time where, like, you come back from the Maw after working with Venari, and I think it's right after your first time in Torghast, I think, and I could be wrong, people can keep me honest, but you're immediately beset upon by a broker of an opposite cartel, asking for information and specifically asking about Venari. And it gives you dialogue options. I don't know what happens depending on what you choose, but like Venari is one of those ones that's, hey, don't tell anybody about me. If anybody asks, I don't exist. You didn't see me. And then this broker is like, hi, have you had contact with this individual? Maw Walker, person who was clearly able to come into and out of the mall. So yeah, I don't know. There's going to be some interesting shenanigans happening in the near future. At least I assume so. Let's see here. I think that's it, unless you have anything else you want to add. Yeah, and I didn't see, and I apologize if anybody had any questions in chat. I didn't see anything that didn't already get answered. So I apologize about that. But Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast, site, and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, or an ads-free site experience.
Thank you, Joe. Again, guys, if you have questions for the show, you can send it to podcast@blizzard.com with subject podcast and watch so we know it's for the show, or you can hit us up on Discord, Patreon, doing podcast questions channel, of which we check. Thank you guys so much for being here and for putting up with the chaos. This has been a really messed up. Apologize to anybody listening to the recording because you have no idea, pre-show with utter bananas. Thanks again for the tolerance and the support. This has been the Blizzard Watch Podcast, and we'll be here next week.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.